Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. Stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, it's so glad to have you here in a special springtime edition of the Weekly Worldview. Now, I know last Sunday was technically the vernal equinox and the beginning of spring and all that, but I'm just starting to feel like it's springtime now, having had a week of relative sunshine and calm under our belts here at the McBurney compound. It is starting to feel like spring. I was out playing, yes, when I should have been working. I was out playing with my two-year-old, Alexis, on our trampoline. And I know, please don't email me about having a two-year-old on a trampoline. I know that it's risky. I know that it's fraught with peril. But we were there. I was there with her, and I tend to not be very aggressive on the trampoline, and it's not because I'm lazy. It's because the little one, she's so little that if I make any sudden movements, she bounces around like a sack of potatoes. So I tend to just lay in the middle of the trampoline, creating a concave shape to the trampoline. And then the two-year-old runs in circles around me, and she shouts various things, as she's wont to do. And this past week, as spring has sprung and it's nice and warm outside, and my neighbors are sitting out on their back deck, I'm laying in the middle of the trampoline. My two-year-old daughter's running around in circles shouting, "Allah! Allah! Allah!" I said, "Alexis, could you maybe just figure out something else to shout besides Allah?" Anyway, Allah is like the word of the week to her, but she doesn't understand what the neighbors might think. She thinks she's a Palestinian child in training for jihad or something, running around me on the trampoline. But it sure has been nice to be able to get outside finally and let the kids run around. Thank you, Lord, for the weather patterns. Thank you, Lord, for climate change. If there was ever time we needed climate change, it was like 2 weeks ago. Oh, man, just couldn't take it anymore. All right, so there's no actual climate change news this week, I don't think. But we do have some interesting plastic surgery news that we're going to start with. We're going to open in Libya. Well, actually in Sao Paulo, Brazil, where Dr. Lacer Ribeiro is a cosmetic surgeon of sorts. And apparently, back in 1995, he was asked to come and visit one Muammar Gaddafi. Yes, and asked to, well, according to this article from the AP, he was asked to enhance Muammar Gaddafi's appearance. Gaddafi here spelled with a G. I see it spelled with a G. I see it spelled with a K, even a Q. Yeah. So I just spell it with all three. That way I've got all my bases covered. Anyway, Lacer Ribeiro, a cosmetic surgeon of sorts from Sao Paulo, Brazil, the plastic surgery capital of the world, was asked to come and shave a few years off Muammar Gaddafi's appearance by removing fat from his belly and injecting it into his wrinkled face. And Mr. Ribeiro, obviously a very ethical plastic surgeon, decided to go ahead and take the money and do the surgery on a brutal dictator. He did it back in 1995, and he says the procedure was carried out with only local anesthesia because Gaddafi wanted to remain alert. So say what you want about Gaddafi and his wrinkled, lax, loose skin, but he's a tough guy. I mean, if you can do fat transfer with just local anesthesia, well, you're tough. It certainly doesn't make you good. It certainly doesn't make you an ally. But at least we know he's tough. Anyway, Ribeiro says that he's only speaking out now about the surgical procedure to provide insight into a man about whom little is known. And the doctor says he's certainly not doing it to boast in any way. He says, quote,
You know, Gaddafi is not looking very good these days. To let potential patients know that I operated on him, it would be counterproductive, so I'm not bragging. Have you seen the man? He looks terrible.
So Muammar's not looking that good these days. But he does look better than the addled Western powers allied against him in the rather embarrassing, well, so far, rather embarrassing campaign to take Gaddafi out. And I was on Bob Enyart's radio show here in Denver this past week. We spent a couple of days discussing just war theory and is this a just war, this adventure into Libya. And, well, we determined as best we could that, yes, it is justified to go in and kill Muammar Gaddafi. Definitely. Now, is it wise to do it at this particular juncture in history? Well, we determined it probably wasn't wise. And is it wise to do it the way it's being done? We figured that was just idiotic. Just moronic, as a matter of fact. So my theory for Libya would be, number one, we should kill Muammar Gaddafi. Okay, just take him out with a missile. We know where he is. Take him out with a missile. And then when the rebels, the Muslim rebels, circle Tripoli, the headquarters there, we bomb all of them too. And then we send in the Southern Baptist Convention to administer a new Libyan regime. So that's my theory. I don't know if the Baptists would go along with it, but from what I understand, they don't allow alcohol in Libya. So the Baptists should be fairly comfortable there. And could certainly do a better job than either Gaddafi or the Muslim extremists who are, well, bound and determined to take his place. It's embarrassing, America, that we've worked ourselves into a corner like this where you can't even kill off a dictator and end up with something better. So having squandered the moral capital of the greatest nation on God's green earth over the past 50 or so years, we find ourselves in the position of haplessly trying to take out a dictator and then not being able to control exactly what happens there afterwards. And so it should be interesting to watch, but certainly not fun. And I wouldn't say entertaining in any way either. All right, let's move on into the justice file. This is from Washington, D.C., as reported by our good friends, the hardcore reporters over at CNN. According to court records, a forensic psychologist at the hospital has testified that John Hinckley Jr., that's right, the man who shot Ronald Reagan, John Hinckley Jr. has recovered, quote, to the point that he poses no imminent risk of danger to himself or others. That's according to doctors, psychologists, psychotherapists, head shrinkers of sorts there at the hospital where John Hinckley is currently being housed. U.S. Attorney Joseph DeGenova, who helped oversee Hinckley's prosecution in 1982, he disagrees. He says no. John Hinckley Jr. is, quote, a time bomb, unquote. A time bomb, says the prosecutor. Well, one would expect that from the prosecutor, right? But shouldn't calmer minds prevail after all? It has been some 30 years that we've had poor Mr. Hinckley locked up. And perhaps he is cured. Perhaps he's healed. Perhaps someone has laid hands upon him and healed the boy. Perhaps. Well, according to the CNN article, Hinckley's diagnosis, his alleged diagnosis, we should probably say. Hinckley's diagnosis always has been somewhat murky. In the latest court proceedings, doctors said he had an unspecified psychotic disorder, as well as suffering from major depression, but they say both are in remission. And so it's time, we've let Mr. Hinckley visit his mom for the past couple of years. He hasn't killed her yet. So the psychologists think that, well, maybe it's time to let John go. Folks, John Hinckley Jr., he's an imminent risk. If he is released, then other people who think about, maybe I want to shoot the president to impress Jodie Foster. Well, I guess it wouldn't be Jodie Foster anymore. Nobody's really looking to impress Jodie anymore, except maybe a plastic surgeon or two. But, can we think of a young famous star that we could insert here for Jodie Foster? We really can't, because we haven't seen a movie since 1993. But insert your favorite actress or actor.
Charlie Sheen.
So maybe someone who wants to impress Charlie Sheen and they want to shoot the president, and now they see that John Hinckley Jr. has been released with virtually no punishment. Virtually none. Yes, he's been in a mental institution for 30 years. So he's lost some of his freedom. That's some punishment. But very little when you think about shooting the president. It seems that the punishment should fit the crime. And that if someone tries to take the life of the chief executive of the United States, that they should be tried and executed in a very public and painful fashion. But no. Psychologists, psychiatrists, and justice officials are going to inflict upon America the imminent risk of danger posed by releasing the man who shot the president. And you folks know that I'm no fan of Barry Ho. That's Barack Hussein Obama. You know I'm no fan of Barry Ho, but if someone takes a shot at Barry Ho, they should be tried and executed post haste, because we don't want something like that getting into the fragile minds of the psychologically unbalanced people on the left, like John Hinckley Jr. By the way, did you know John Hinckley stalked Jimmy Carter as well as Ronald Reagan?
Oh, really?
That's right. He didn't shoot Reagan because Reagan was a conservative. He shot Reagan because, well, Hinckley was a nut. And we need to keep the nuts under control. And one thing that will help keep the nuts under control is to instill them with fear of severe and swift punishment should they do something crazy like take a shot at the president. But in America, we've lost track of what justice is. We've lost track of right and wrong somehow, especially at the highest levels of government and the psychiatric profession. And there you have it. There we are, folks. And here we go. Here's another one from the politics file. This is from the Associated Press regarding United States Attorney General Eric Holder. He's upset, Eric Holder is, over the rate of cop killings that are happening here in the United States of America. A total of 162 officers died in the line of duty last year, up from 117 in 2009. So far this year, 49 police officers have been killed in the line of duty. That's a 20% rise from the same time last year. Well, that's a lot of cops getting shot. That's amazing that this is going on. So Eric Holder, always on top of the case, he has directed the 93 U.S. attorneys to inform state, local, and tribal enforcement agencies of federal programs designed to protect officers. So did you know that? We've got federal programs designed to protect police officers. I thought that's what bulletproof vests and Glocks were for, to protect officers. But apparently, Mr. Holder has some administrative policies that he hopes. What else did he say? He says he also directed his 93 U.S. attorneys nationwide to identify repeat offenders for possible prosecution under federal law that would make them eligible for stiffer sentences. And here's my problem, Mr. Holder. When we're talking about cop killers, number one, we should never be talking about repeat offenders, because no one should ever be able to repeat that offense. And stiffer sentences, Mr. Holder, please, there should be no stiffer sentence than the sentence for killing a police officer in the line of duty, and that sentence, not to be redundant, should be death, swift and severe and painful and public death penalty inflicted on the maniac who would dare take the life of a police officer. So Holder gave this gave a speech in which he expressed concern over the rate of police officers being killed, and he called on his U.S. attorneys to somehow protect officers. And apparently after this meeting there in Baltimore, the police commissioner there said the law enforcement community needs to look at the issue more broadly, focusing on what steps can make Americans safer, not just police officers. So the police commissioner there in Baltimore wanted to make sure that everyone felt included in the mockery and the sham that is the illusion of safety that the politicians and the psycho-babbling bureaucrats have created for us all. All right, boys, we won't give up. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Vito. Vito, put that guitar away. I say, time to get back to the show. All right, and we are back. It is the Weekly World View. Thank you. Vito Bratta on the guitar, one of the greatest soloists in the history of 80s hair metal, tragically suffered an arthritic condition that has rendered his fretting hand sadly useless. What a tragedy. Anyway, it's ironic, though, isn't it? It's at least ironic. I think he's now, he's remodeling homes somewhere in the New Jersey suburbs, I believe. Well, he can use his hand to hammer, but he can't use it for a hammer-on or a pull-off. That's guitar lingo. All right. Now, let's get back to the broadcast. Important news, ladies and gentlemen. This is from the... Well, it could have been from the war file, but it ended up in the domestic tranquility file. And you'll understand after hearing the plight of this poor soldier. This is from Grand Prairie, Texas, from CBS Television there. After serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, Orlando Salazar of the 82nd Airborne Division was set to make a duty station change from Fort Bragg to Fort Hood in just a few weeks, and he was at home visiting his family. So he was visiting with friends and family at a bar last Saturday night in the Grand Prairie, Texas area when a fight broke out. Salazar was knocked to the ground and his head hit the concrete floor. His family said after that, some of the men involved in the fight continued to kick him while he was knocked out on the ground. And Orlando Salazar, 82nd Airborne Division, veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, died face down on a barroom floor outside of Grand Prairie, Texas, right here in the good old U.S. of A. He was killed. His family called him a teddy bear. And his family's shocked that anyone would hurt his son. And, well, what more is there to say? That's that. When you suffer and survive and defend America, and you come back to find out that America is full of people who would stomp your guts out in a bar for no good reason. Why? Because they have no fear of justice. And we'll get into a little bit more on that as we go through the broadcast. And as a matter of fact, this next story from the war file fits in with the idea that if there is no fear of justice and retribution, justice to be executed swiftly and painfully, then criminals will run amok. It's just common sense, isn't it? Listen to what's happening in Israel. I don't know if you're aware, but for the past 2 weeks, missiles have been raining down on southern cities like Sderot and Beersheba in Israel. It's been going on for the past couple of weeks. Here's a story from the Jerusalem Post. As missile fire from the Gaza Strip escalated last week, the IDF is preparing for possible deployment of the Iron Dome counter-rocket defense system along Israel's border with Gaza. Now, officially, the Israeli Air Force claims that this Iron Dome missile defense shield is still not actually ready for deployment. They say it's designed to defend against rockets with a range of a couple of miles up to about 40 miles. And each battery consists of a multi-mission radar manufactured by Israel Aerospace Industry and three rocket launchers equipped with 20 interceptor rockets. That's the Iron Dome. The Defense Ministry there in Israel, unfortunately, has so far only purchased and received two of the Iron Dome rocket batteries. And each of them can only protect an urban area of approximately 65 square miles. And Israel's small, but it's not that small. But apparently, one of the Iron Dome batteries has indeed been deployed near Beersheba just this weekend, this past weekend, I should say. And the Israelis are going to attempt to defend themselves against rocket fire with a missile defense system. But there is a small problem. One Israeli defense official said, quote, "If the system is, for example, deployed outside of Sderot, currently under daily bombardment, Then the terror groups will figure it out and begin firing at other cities that are not protected. He says this could potentially cause more harm than good. And the problem is, the same problem that's going on here in America. The criminal elements who want to do harm have no fear. They have no fear of a massive military strike by Israel because Israel's been cowed. Israel has been, what's the word I'm looking for? They've been emasculated and now have been abandoned, apparently, by the Western powers. And these criminal elements, which is basically what these terrorists from Gaza and the other terrorists up in Lebanon, basically just a bunch of criminals, they have no fear. And there's an estimate now that Hamas has some 5 to 10,000 rockets, and Hezbollah in the north could have as many as 40,000 rockets ready to launch at Israel. And there's not an Iron Dome, my friends, that are going to protect Israel from the rocket fire. The only thing that will protect them is a swift and painful response inflicted upon their enemies, striking fear into the hearts of the children unto the fourth generation. That's what's necessary. But unfortunately, Israel, I'm afraid, doesn't have the means. But we might just find out here in the coming weeks as Israel feels more and more isolated and more rockets land in their rural towns and villages. We may just find out what Israel has left up its sleeve, and I hope it's something, because it doesn't look good. All right, more from the war file. Just in case the situation in Israel wasn't depressing enough, get a load of this. This is from Tehran, Iran. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said at a recent meeting with council heads in Tehran, he says, one person asked me, who will be the next leader of Iran? To which Ahmadinejad replied, don't you think God knows who's next? Yeah, So Mahmoud Ahmadinejad assumes that God already has a plan for his successor. And I think Mahmoud is hoping that it's his associate, Esfandiar Rahim Mashai. That's who Ahmadinejad is hoping that God has chosen. And I think he's saying that only because Esfandiar Rahim Mashai is a name that's actually harder to pronounce than Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. That took us, how long did it take for us to figure that one out? And now we're going to have to figure out Esfandiar, I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing that. Esfandiar Rahim Mashai. But folks, so Ahmadinejad believes that God is involved in what he does and that he's a part of God's will and God's plan. Meanwhile, Western leaders, to a man and a woman, they smirk at even the idea of God. They smirk, they laugh. They consider you an ignorant country bumpkin if you think there even is a God, let alone that he would be involved in anything that's going on with anything that they have anything to do with. Did that make any sense? I hope it did. Anyway, so let me ask you this question. Let me put this question to the audience. This will be our weekly poll question. The question is, between the devoted pagan and the self-absorbed agnostic, in a conflict between these two worldviews, who wins in the long term, do you think? Do you think it's the devout pagan who believes he's doing God's will, or the self-absorbed agnostic who's basically out for money, chicks, power, and all that? Who wins in the long term? Send me your answer. I may have it already figured out, but I'm open. I'm open to suggestions from the peanut gallery. All right. Now, meanwhile, while Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is pondering the will of God in his daily affairs and the affairs of his nation, and war is being made upon Christendom, I should say, on a daily basis, and against our good friends there in Israel. Here in the United States, our military stands ready and poised to do the right thing. Here's a story from the Washington Times. Four branches of the military here in the United States have begun sending training materials to 2.2 million active and reserve troops as a prelude to opening the ranks to open homosexuals. The new training materials have instructions on many things. For example, and importantly, what to do if an officer sees two male Marines kissing in a shopping mall. Israel deploys Iron Dome. The Islamists are bubbling up from the surface to kick out the dictators and set up their caliphate. And in America, we're teaching Marine officers what to do when they encounter a couple of homos at the mall. Who do you think wins in the long run, ladies and gentlemen? But let me get back to the story. Key themes in this new important training material. Key themes are that sexual orientation will no longer be a bar to service, that all service members must respect each other, even if they bugger one another, and that partners of homosexual troops will not receive the benefits of heterosexual spouses. So if you're shacking up with your buddy in the barracks, you can't put him on your health insurance. Okay, so those are the key points that our military is concerned with this week. Major General Joel Harper from the Air Force said, quote, "We're going to make this gay ban repeal training. We're going to make it happen expeditiously. It's great training," unquote. There's a man concerned primarily for his own pathetic military career. It's great training? Teaching officers what to do when they encounter boys kissing boys? That's great training? We used to have to say it was great training when we had to slog through the mud with a rifle until you were about to throw up and your legs felt like they were on fire. And the drill instructor would ask you, "Isn't this great training?" "Yes, sir, great training." But that was a different situation, ladies and gentlemen. Now they have to say it's great training when they instruct boys on how to French kiss one another.
Yeah.
Back to the story now. Before, I don't want you to get too sick here. I won't delve into the details. Well, I will a little bit. I'm sorry. Now listen to this. Now see if you catch this. The United States Marine Corps, which a Pentagon survey found holds deep opposition to lifting the ban, plans to publicly release its training materials on April 1st. That's April Fool's Day, ladies and gentlemen. That's when the Marine Corps intends to start out its training regimen on boys kissing boys. So these training materials include videos, vignettes. Yes, vignettes. So there's one vignette that our officers, our military officers are going to have to watch. And they're going to have to, at the end, they're going to have to say, "This is great training." One of the vignettes is about seeing two male Marines kissing. It's a part of a list of scenarios to help instructors prepare commanders for incidents likely to arise. Oh, man, my Marine Corps, what are you doing? Anyway, they say that as a Marine Corps officer, when you see two Marines of the male persuasion kissing one another, they say, quote, "Your assessment should be made without regard to sexual orientation. Commanders can't..." Yeah, I know, Alexis. It is totally shocking. It's shot. You see that? My two-year-old daughter has run screaming into the room. Thank you for not screaming Allah. My extremely attractive audio engineer is whisking the young child out of the studio. We don't have gates in our house to keep our kids out. We don't have gates at the top of the stairs. We don't have gates to keep them out of the studio. And they basically run wild. They're actually fairly well disciplined. What happened? Oh yeah. Well, that was actually a nice interlude, because this story about Marines kissing one another and how to respond is... it's getting me down. Anything else? Oh, one more thing. Military commanders cannot rule a bar off limits simply because it caters to gays. Nor can commanders bar an off-duty homosexual from marching in a gay pride parade as long as he doesn't wear his uniform. They do prefer that he wears some clothes, even though that's not necessarily standard fare at a gay pride parade. They just don't want him wearing their uniform. So as Iron Dome goes up in Israel and the world shakes and our military is stretched thin, This is what we do to them. This is what we've done. All right, more news from the world of the freaks. From New York City, transsexual freaks of nature are contesting a New York City Health Department practice of requiring people to go on... Wait a minute. Did I read this right? I don't even know if I can go forward with this. Transvestites in New York... They're contesting a New York City Health Department practice of requiring people to undergo general sur... I can't even say it. Apparently, the New York City Health Department requires people to undergo genital surgery and a post-surgery psychiatric evaluation before they can change their gender on their birth certificate. And this has the trannies in New York quite upset. Many transgender people, according to this article from the Associated Press, many transgender people can't have that surgery for medical or financial reasons, and having hormone or other treatment to change gender should be enough, they say. They shouldn't have to prove, like, physically that they've, you know, made the commitment, so to speak. And the city lawyers say officials are just trying to make sure that there are checks on changing an important identity document used for citizenship, social security, and passport purposes. I mean, unless you're running for president. Then apparently a birth certificate's not that important. But, you know, if you try to get a driver's license in New York, try to do that without your birth certificate. Anyway, but that being aside, so this lawsuit was filed last week by Louis Burney, a 70-year-old transgendered man. Burney had genital surgery, but objects to the requirement for detailed documentation and a psychiatric report, calling them violations of medical privacy. I guess if you're transgendered, you just feel like you should just be able to just tell people what you think you are, and they should be able to just change the documents, he, she, it, whatever. Can't I just visualize who I want to be and actualize myself without having to, you know, go through that whole surgical thing? Can't I just take some drugs and hallucinate that I'm a boy or a girl, and then you can just... Because can't I just be what I want to be? Anyway, according to the AP article, updating ID documents has long been an issue for transgendered people. Well, not that long, right? I mean, how long have people been participating in... that whole thing. I mean, it hasn't been that long, has it? It's a relatively new thing, I think. Anyway, that's just disgusting. All right, and if you thought that was bad, listen to this. Listen how the devious left hijacks the language and the culture. In Worcester, Massachusetts, the NAACP's newly revived Worcester chapter elected a 28-year-old openly gay black man as its president this month. A branch of the organization outside Atlantic City chose a Honduran immigrant, and the Jackson State University chapter in Mississippi recently elected a white man. And they go on to say how wonderful it is that that everything's so diverse there at the NAACP. This AP article says the group does, NAACP does not keep track of numbers. But in recent years, NAACP chapters in New Jersey, Connecticut, and Georgia have elected Hispanics. A white man was picked in Aiken, South Carolina. And 2 years ago, a Detroit suburb selected a Bangladeshi American as their leader. So the Associated Press and the NAACP has lumped the homosexual in with all these other normal minorities. And you would think that these normal minorities, this would start to bother you after a while to be lumped in with the queers. Look, I might be Bangladeshi, but I would never do that. Come on, man, don't lump me in with the fag. That's just disgusting. More news on the homos pouring out of the closet. Just, I mean, could someone just put a cork in that for crying out loud? It's ridiculous. From Washington, from the AP again. The Obama administration has introduced its first statement calling for the United Nations top human rights body to combat discrimination against homosexuals and lesbians around the world, completing a U.S. reversal from years of ambiguity on the subject during the presidency. Yeah, we have to talk about George W. Bush. George W. Bush was at best ambiguous on the fact that the homos are coming for our children. But Barry Ho is like, Katie, bar the door. The homos are pouring out. They're taking over the Girl Scouts. They're taking over the Marine Corps. They're taking over the NAACP. Let the good times roll, says Barry. So now the United States has introduced some statement. The article says it's not in the form of a binding resolution, but they hope it'll make everybody feel good. And they say that a binding resolution vote could be brought later this year. By the way, binding resolutions at the United Nations are generally not non-binding. So that's the one thing we've got going for us. Anyway, this new U.S. statement calls for nations to end any criminal punishment against lesbians, gays, and bisexuals, and insists that people must be freed from discrimination because of their sexual orientation. An American spokesdyke says that the U.S. was proud to be taking a lead role in promoting the idea that gay rights are human rights. Yeah, all right. Can I read any more of this? Okay. Obama has stepped up the case for gay rights in recent months, winning a congressional vote to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Seek, Don't Smell policy, that ban on homosexuals serving openly in the military, and urging last weekend in a joint statement with the Brazilian president for the establishment of a special investigator to monitor respect for lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgendered. Is there anyone we missed? Is there any deviancy that hasn't been brought to the fore yet and given an official title? Because we want to include them too. Nope, the bestiality people, you're going to have to wait a couple of years, but be patient. Be patient. Barry wants to create a, what does it say here? A special investigator there at the UN to monitor respect for homosexuals. Must be a patronage job, huh, for Michelle's homo nephew or something like that. I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't understand all that. Supporting the statement last week were some newcomers to the homosexual tide. Thailand, Rwanda, El Salvador, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic? You gotta be kidding me. I thought that was the last bastion of sanity left on Earth. Now they've gotten to the Dominicans. For crying out loud, is nothing sacred? One more, ladies and gentlemen, from the Culture File. Just in case you had given up all hope, please know that while the United Nations, the United States government, and the United States military have fully bowed before the homosexuals, and I just mean that in that they've given in, there is one entity that is still standing up for some semblance of normalcy, or at least they're trying to. Dateline San Diego, a judge last Friday said he would issue a ruling this coming week in a lawsuit filed by Target Corporation against a pro-homosexual marriage group to make the homos stop canvassing outside the front of their stores, cornering their patrons, and asking them questions about their stance on gay marriage. So these homosexuals are hanging outside of Target and harassing shoppers. I mean, if you're going to Target, the last thing you want to hear about is a bunch of queers on each other. I mean, come on. I'm going for some socks, for crying out loud. Maybe a bag of chips. I don't want to talk about homosexuals. Let's see. Target made a big donation, you'll remember, to a business group that backed a Republican in Minnesota, and that's got the ire of the homosexuals up hot and heavy. Now, during the court hearing last Friday, Target said that the solicitors are on their private property and Target has the right to enforce its policy against any type of solicitation. Mind you, Target insists it remains committed to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community. Is there anyone we missed? No? Speak up now. No? You bestiality folks, you'll have to be patient. They say they support all this deviancy, and the lawsuit has nothing to do with the political agenda of this particular homosexual organization. So Target's sure to cover all their bases. They don't want to disaffect any potential homosexual shoppers for Granimals, or whatever it is homosexuals shop for at Target. The group that Target is fighting is called Canvas for a Cause, and its director, Tress Watson, says that Target wants to silence the 12,000-member group that formed in 2009 because it promotes gay marriage. A quote from Canvas for a Cause director, he says, "This situation is very David versus Goliath. We understand that they are the Goliath in the room. By the way, have you seen that statue of David at Caesar's Palace? Oh, it is fabulous.
You're the one who sets the bar, the hairdo king, the fashions are. You're fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
You're fabulous.
Oh, I'm fabulous.
You're the one we all can see. It's all about you.
It's all about me.
You're fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
You're fabulous.
I'm fabulous.
My goodness, where did that come from? Oh, man. All right, as disgusting as all of that was. I don't know, I just had a whole passel of homosexual stories. A herd, a flock, no. You have a herd of cattle, a flock of birds, a pile of homosexuals, I believe that's the plural. So I just had a pile of those stories all of a sudden. Now let's move into serious news, folks. This is the Domestic Tranquility File, and it is no fun out there, ladies and gentlemen. Megan Brown, a former Florida pageant queen, her home was barged into around 3 a.m. by a 42-year-old Albert Franklin Hill after Brown had responded to a knock at the front door. The man allegedly grabbed the 110-pound beauty queen around her nose and mouth and dragged her into an upstairs bedroom. Now, the woman's fiancé was quickly awakened by the altercation and ran to her side. The fiancé got him off of her long enough for her to scramble to the room where she keeps a pink .38 special pistol. Yeah. Brown shot the suspect several times, hitting him in the chest, the groin, the thigh, and the back, just for good measure. And the intruder was pronounced dead at the scene. All right, so we start with a little bit of, well, it's not good news, I suppose, but at least it's encouraging news in knowing that if no one else will fight for us, even if you're a 110-pound beauty queen and your 38 special happens to be pink, you can still defend yourself. Now, this particular intruder, Albert Franklin Hill, he had a criminal record stretching back nearly three decades, including arrests for burglary, battery, drug possession, and grand theft. He served 13 years back in the 80s and was released just this past September after serving a fourth term in prison, part of the catch-and-release program there in the modern American justice system. And, well, he hasn't been thrown back this time. No. There's a criminal who will certainly never hurt anyone again. All right. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. This is going to be a short segment, I think, because I went a little long in that last segment. As if segments even matter, right? Well, they matter to some degree, because it just keeps me sane to have segments. And every once in a while, I need a musical interlude, especially when I'm reading stories, well, like this. Terry Tennant, a 52-year-old man, was mad at Jerry Blasingame because Blasingame's dog went to the bathroom in his yard. So, an argument ensued last Wednesday after the dog pooped in the guy's yard. Well, the argument got out of control, and neighbors began shooting at one another. The man upon whose yard the dog pooped was shot in the chest, the arm, and the hip with a shotgun blast. But his injuries were not considered life-threatening. So why is it that neighbors would come to gunfire over a dog taking a dump in a yard? Well, I would posit to you that many of these dim-witted criminal types just have no fear. They have no fear, and so when they get mad, they grab a gun, they start shooting. What's the worst that could happen to them? They end up housed and educated and medicated for 20 or 30 years before they're either released or maybe executed, possibly maybe, but doubtful. Was it his first offense? Was it the first guy he shot over dog poop in the yard? Oh, well, perhaps we can rehabilitate him. Anyway, these criminals just have no fear. And when the bad guys have no fear, I mean, the good guys, they better run for the exits, because the bad guys are going to take over. Let's see. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. Edmonton, Kentucky. A man found Gary and Barbara Holloway dead in their bed last Tuesday. Soon after, police issued an Amber Alert for the 15-year-old teenage boy who was living with them and the 12-year-old girlfriend that the couple had forbidden the 15-year-old to see. Police feared that the two children may have been in grave danger. Well, a day later, the 15-year-old boy was charged with murdering Gary and Barbara Holloway. These two had welcomed him into their home 3 months ago when his mother said she could no longer control him. Family members said the boy was an eighth grader at the local middle school and habitually got in trouble for bringing cigarettes to school, bullying other children, and talking back to his teachers. Family members said that the 15-year-old's father is in prison. The 15-year-old is being held at the Adair County Youth Development Center. Besides murder, he's charged with fleeing and evading, wanton endangerment, criminal mischief, reckless driving, and just for good measure, driving without a license. Which seems fairly ridiculous since he has shot and killed two people. But that's the state of justice in America today. There is no turning back. Doug McBurney, this is the Weekly Worldview. It's good to have you this week. And these next four stories. I'm just going to plow through them because it's very, very hard to take. But I want you people to know what's happening out there. Because if you think that Al-Qaeda or the labor unions or Barack Obama are the greatest threat to civilization and your life, well, just listen to what's happening, folks. West Palm Beach, Florida. 33-year-old Fede Dadalus was convicted last week of sexual battery on a person less than 12 years of age and of impregnation of a child. The girl was 9 years old. Fede Dadalus, 33-year-old man, impregnated a 9-year-old. He was sentenced to life in prison. The girl carried the baby to term and delivered it when she was 10. The victim reluctantly identified Dadalus as the man who sexually assaulted her. She told counselors that she was afraid to talk about it because she was afraid of being returned to Haiti if she revealed what happened. So is there anyone on this earth right now more deserving of a swift and painful death penalty than this scumbag? 9 years old, I said. All right, from the justice file, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. A child molester convicted in Florida of buying a young Vietnamese girl in the early 1970s and abusing her as a slave from the age of 5 until she was a young adult was sentenced last Friday to the maximum of 30 years in prison. George Joseph England, 66 years old, was convicted in California in 1977. Of molestation charges involving some of his victim's young friends, but he ran away to Florida with her before he was sentenced. They lived for decades under an assumed name, taken from a dead child until 2004. And now the adult victim has decided to go to the FBI. The victim is now 43 years old. Her name is Jackie, and she called England pathetic during a sentencing hearing and said the abuse has caused her severe depression and struggles with alcohol. She said, quote, "It was sick that you had to take a little girl for your own pleasure," she said to him. And then she pointed at him in court and said, "Because of this degenerate, I don't know who I am." After the victim came forward, England was captured in Florida and returned to California to serve what originally were 3 life sentences, but those sentences were reduced. And England was about to walk out of prison in March of last year when federal charges were finally filed in Florida, and still justice will not be done because Mr. England will be housed and medicated, clothed and educated, kept warm in the winter and cool in the summer for the rest of his life, unless he gets out sooner, which is of course possible. Dateline Nashua, New Hampshire, from the justice file. A man who admitted he took part in a deadly machete and knife attack on a New Hampshire woman and her daughter was convicted of murder last Friday. Minutes after the jury returned the verdict against 21-year-old Christopher Gribble, a Superior Court judge imposed the mandatory sentence, you guessed it, this is a machete and knife murder, and he was sentenced to life. The judge did say, quote, infinity is not enough jail time, unquote. Well, that's all well and good, Mr. Judge, for you to say that. But of course, the judge here was not able to impose the death penalty because, I don't know, because we've all lost our minds. You remember this story, the woman and her 12-year-old mother were, a woman and her 12-year-old daughter were taken on by these home invaders. And for the first time in court, the surviving victim, young Jamie Cates, who's now 12 years old, she actually appeared in the courtroom for sentencing. According to the AP article, most of Gribble's knife blows targeted the girl. A lead investigator said that even as the young girl lay on the bedroom floor, bloodied and fainting and acting dead, she opened one eye and watched as Gribble plunged a knife into her mother's throat. The mother was murdered. Stephen Spader of Brookline, who wielded the machete in the attacks, was convicted and sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Gribble's multiple life sentences were the maximum allowed by law. Two other men who participated in the break-in but who did not take part in the attacks have reached their own plea agreements with the state and will be sentenced to prison for robbery and burglary and conspiracy. One other will be sentenced for conspiracy to commit murder. And another man who was not at the house but helped the murderers hide and conceal evidence after the crime, that man has made a deal and he'll be sentenced to 5 years. And we wonder why it is that the entire world is erupting into violence and chaos. It's because there's no sheriff in town anymore. I mean, it appears that the last great hope for justice and liberty and everything good, America, that last great hope has abandoned our position as the sheriff in town. We've squandered all the moral capital built by our founders and our mothers and fathers and grandmothers, our ancestors. We've squandered it all. We've killed our own children. We've abandoned justice. We've abandoned our allies. We've abandoned the truth. We've abandoned our Creator God. And now, you've heard the statement that nature abhors a vacuum. Well, do you hear that sucking sound? Do you hear it? Let me tell you what it sounds like. From Sparks, Nevada, the Associated Press, police in Nevada say a 26-year-old mother torched the body of her newborn daughter and left the corpse in a field where it was found by a woman walking her dog. Washoe County jail records show that Suseli Margarita Ardone was held last Wednesday on $100,000 bail pending a court appearance. She's to be charged with arson and destroying evidence. The reason being the police don't know how the baby died. They only know that the mother set the body on fire. The autopsy indicates the infant was dead before the body was set on fire. So the police are helpless, and the justice officials there don't know. Well, we certainly can't charge the woman. All we know is that she burned up this evidence. And it was a newborn, and it's really tough for governing officials in this country, in any state in this nation, to charge someone with killing an infant, where if she had just gone to a doctor a few days earlier and had him do it, well, we would have avoided the whole torching of the body and everything would have been nice and clean and surgical and nobody would have gotten in any trouble. But here we are. The mother told police that the baby had had health problems since birth. One more from the domestic tranquility file, actually a couple. Iowa authorities canceled a training drill last week involving a mock school shooting. Yeah. The Trainer County, Iowa school system had received several alleged threats over the 4-hour drill because the drill was set up. The scenario was that a teenager is venting his anger over illegal immigration and starts shooting up a school. That was the play scenario. Well, the school district claimed they were getting threats against the school. The sheriff there was aware of one specific threat in which an out-of-state caller threatened a real shooting at the high school. So the drill had gained attention after concerns were raised by the Iowa Minutemen, which says the fictitious scenario had a political agenda. Well, the fictitious scenario did have a political agenda, obviously, but it's also, I mean, can any of you parents just stop for a second and ponder the fact that your child's school is having shooting drills? I mean, just think about that for a few minutes, okay? And just decide in your own mind if you're doing the right thing by turning your kids over to the public government school factories every day. But no need to worry, ladies and gentlemen, that the school shooting drill was canceled. Let's go to Martinsville, Indiana. A 15-year-old boy who had been expelled from school opened fire at his Central Indiana Middle School before classes began last Friday, shooting another student in the stomach. The child who was shot will likely survive the shooting, but he's in a lot of pain. Police said the teen in custody was not supposed to be on campus because he had been expelled. He wasn't supposed to be there. That was not a drill, Martinsville, Indiana. All right. Let's see. We just have a couple more stories here from the culture file before. Is that the music? I just don't know if I can take it anymore. I don't want to bum anybody out. I mean, the news is what it is. So let's do something a little bit more lighthearted. This is from ABC News in Dallas, Texas. Get a load of this. I said, get a load of this, will you? Dallas Cowboys receiver Dez Bryant and three of his friends were ejected from the Dallas North Park Shopping Center last Saturday after a dispute between the football player and two off-duty officers over the fact that the football player and his friends were wearing pants that sagged below their hips, exposing their underwear. Yeah, officers encountered Bryant and his three companions wearing these droopy pants in the mall. When the officers asked the four to pull up their pants, Bryant naturally launched into a profanity-laced tirade, accusing the police of, "Hey, man, you stopped me like I stole something. I didn't steal nothing. Get your hand on my pants." "Well, son, you understand that we have a policy here in the store because there are a lot of shoplifters who wear these baggy pants and they fill them up with merchandise. But
get your hands on me. You call me a thief just because I'm a brother? Is that what you're saying? You're saying I'm a thief, man, just because I'm up a sack of pants? Get your hands on my pants. Don't touch my hat. Don't. Do you know who I am? Do you know who I am, Dez Bryant? I play for the Dallas Cowboys, man. I made more money since you grabbed my pants than you make in a month."
All right. Let's see here. Is there any more to this story? The four had to be escorted from the mall. No word on whether or not their pants were ever pulled up above waist level. All right, finally, in an interview for a new book, Sammy Hagar claims to have had dreams about UFOs. And when asked whether he believed he had ever been abducted, Hagar answered quickly, "I think I have." At which point the reporter said, "What? Really? I was just kidding around, Sammy. Are you serious, though? I've got tape rolling." "Do you seriously believe that?" the reporter asked. And Sammy Hagar goes on to explain that a passage in the book described as a dream in which he is contacted by aliens from outer space was in fact reality. That's right. The tale describes how the beings tapped into his mind through a wireless connection. Hagar says, "They were plugged into me, man. It was a download situation. Or they uploaded something from my brain, like an experiment." All right, so the last word is from the Red Rocker himself. That's it, folks. I'm out of here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, my friends at American Right to Life, at Theology Online, and at Personhood USA. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.